Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging headfirst into one of neuroscience's most intriguing puzzles, how our brains actually process and express emotions. Imagine, you know, feeling something strong physically, but not quite being able to name it, or maybe even grasp that you're feeling it intensely.
Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating paradox.
Exactly. And exploring it gives us incredible insight into how different brain parts work together, how we feel and understand. Our mission today is really to unpack this intricate dance between the brain hemispheres, specifically looking through the lens of a really key paper.
Yeah, this one's from Paul and colleagues back in 2006, titled Emotional Arousal in a Genesis of the Corpus Callosum.
Right, and it reveals some, well, truly eye-opening things about what it even means to feel. Get ready. Okay, so let's start with the core piece here. What exactly is a genesis of the corpus callosum, or AGCC?
Right. AGCC, it's a rare condition, congenital, meaning from birth. The corpus callosum, that's this huge bundle of nerves, like 200 million fibers.
The superhighway between the brain halves?
That's the one. In AGCC, it's just absent, completely missing.
Wow. But what's really striking, you mentioned, is that cognitive function, like IQ, can be totally normal.
Often, yes.
Yeah.
In primary AGCC, general intelligence is often well within the typical range. Mm-hmm. You might not know just from chatting with someone.
Huh. So where do the differences show up then?
Well, what's particularly interesting is that despite that normal intelligence, the main area of difficulty often seems to be social, emotional processing, social interaction. And here's a fascinating bit. These challenges are often way more obvious to people around them, like family, than to the person themselves.
Really? So they might not even perceive the deficit themselves?
Often not to the same extent. It really highlights these hidden but crucial roles of brain connectivity, especially for complex things like emotional intelligence. You know?
That is profound. So how did the researchers, Paul and his team, how did they actually measure something so internal?
Good question. Measuring subjective feeling is always tricky, right? They used a clever approach. Standardized emotional pictures, the IEPS set.
Ah, yes, the International Affective Picture Series. Those are designed to reliably trigger different feelings.
Exactly, and they measure two main things. First, verbal ratings, people just saying how pleasant or unpleasant, and how sort of aroused or intense the picture made them feel.
Okay, the subjective report. What was the second thing?
The objective part. Mm-hmm. Psychophysiological responses specifically, skin conductance responses, SCRs.
So like measuring sweat. An involuntary physical reaction.
Precisely. It reflects the body's automatic arousal level.
Got it. So they had what people said and what their bodies did and the results. This is where it gets really interesting, right?
This is the core finding, yeah. Compared to the control group, people with AGCC showed much more variability in their cognitive ratings, their verbal reports.
More variability how?
They often struggle to categorize the emotions, particularly the negative ones, fear, sadness. And crucially, their verbal ratings of arousal, of intensity, were significantly lower, especially for unpleasant pictures.
So looking at a scary picture, they might say, eh, it wasn't that intense. Their words were kind of blunted, closer to neutral.
That's a good way to put it. Blunted verbal ratings, as if the conscious experience of the intensity wasn't fully registering or accessible.
Okay, but what about their bodies? The skin conductance.
And here's the kicker. Despite saying they felt less aroused, many AGCC subjects produced large skin conductance responses, big physiological reactions.
Oh.
Yeah. Their SCRs actually discriminated pretty well between the different emotion types, you know, higher for pleasant and unpleasant compared to neutral pictures.
So their bodies were definitely reacting. The basic emotional machinery was working on some level.
It strongly suggests that, yes, the basic automatic physiological response system seemed relatively intact. Even robust in some cases.
So the body feels it, but the words don't follow. Is it just they can't label it, or is the feeling somehow incomplete without that conscious awareness?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? The findings point towards a preserved ability to generate the physical response, but a compromised ability to rate it verbally, to consciously access it. This pattern looks a lot like something called alexithymia.
Alexithymia, difficulty identifying and describing feelings.
Exactly. It suggests that maybe, say, the right hemisphere is generating the physical feeling, but without that strong connection via the corpus callosum to the language centers, mostly in the left hemisphere.
It's hard to put words to it, to bring it fully into conscious awareness.
Precisely. It's like feeling the heat, but maybe not fully recognizing it as danger or discomfort. In a way you can articulate, the link is weakened.
That's remarkable. It shows how feeling and knowing your feeling or expressing it are actually distinct brain processes. They need that connection.
Absolutely. It challenges our everyday idea that feeling and knowing you feel are the same thing. They rely on this constant chatter between hemispheres.
So what does this all mean for you listening? This deep dive really underscores how vital that connection is, not just for complex thought, but for the full integrated experience of emotion, feeling it and expressing it.
And it leaves us with a bigger question, doesn't it? Beyond just the corpus callosum, what other pathways, what other networks are essential for weaving together our social and emotional lives?
Mm-hmm.
How does that intricate dance create the richness of what we experience?
Something to really think about. That constant communication shaping our inner world.